Everyone is afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. And you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadow sweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, August 15th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
It was kind of a quiet day in the markets, so I think the paper markets are making all-time highs once again today. You have the Dow. Oh, I'm sorry. You have gold up 340 today at 1340. You have silver up 12 at 1986. Platinum was down 11 at 1114, and palladium was up 9 at $697. There was a little bit of weakness on the dollar, you know, barely 0.08 at 95.61. Crude oil was up big again, 130 at 45.79. The paper markets today, you had the Dow up 58 points, 18,635. The NASDAQ was up 30 at 52.62. The S&P was up 6 at 21.90. 10-year yield, 1.55%. That was up almost, it was up a little over 2.5%. Euro 1.12. Paper markets overseas were up fractionally, so nothing too exciting there. So a fairly quiet day. The minutes, you know, they make such a big to-do, you know, about the Fed's releasing their minutes come Wednesday to see if they can glean any type of wording that could possibly predict which way she's going to go as far as the rate increases. It's just like, you know,
it's like reading tea leaves or shaking the bones or something. You get an African witch doctor and let him shake the bones, and you try to read the bones and see what they mean. And look, it's just a bunch of damn bones.
I mean,
that's all it is, you know?
Fantasy land. I mean, it really, really is. And it's just, you know, for the markets to respond to anything that should come out of the Federal Reserve.
I know.
Because the fact of the matter is they can't raise rates. You know, they did their little quarter point. Maybe if they did another quarter point, we'd have the same reaction as a year ago. But how far are they going to go? The only reason that they're increasing their little quarter points is so they can decrease them here in the near future, because they have no room left to play if we turn into a severe recession, which everybody knows, you know, I mean, that's just a given. And they have nothing other than, you know, to continue to, you know, print funds. They don't have a lot they can pull out of their hat. So, but we will see probably quiet trading until Wednesday as everyone awaits those minutes. And, you know, those minutes really aren't going to say anything different than what they released at the meeting. You know, there's, you know, it's, so it's really kind
and
of.
And I saw one article, I don't have it here in front of me, but one article someone wrote prior to the last Federal Open Market Committee meeting. And he was just saying, look, they're going to produce virtually an identical report to what they did at the previous Open Market Committee meeting, which was virtually identical to the one before that and before that, because they understand that if they say anything new, someone is going to interpret that as reason for the herd to stampede. And the point is, the public is reading so much into every word that is, or at least investors, you can't say the public, but investors are reading so much into every word that's uttered by Janet Yellen that she is now, she's paralyzed. They can't tell you. They say, well, they can't sit back and say, well, you know, it's going to be maybe 3% different than it was a month ago. They can't even hint at that, because if they do, the investors are going to stampede one way or the other. So they're caught in a fearful situation in large measure, not just because the investors are being unreasonable, but because I think and because the entire system is so fragile.
Exactly.
That they are scared to death. Oh, my God, don't say that. Now, don't. It's like going over to somebody's house for dinner. And whatever you do, don't talk about politics and don't talk about religion. And what are we going to talk about? By the time we got done, we can't even say anything for fear that the system is fragile. And that's perhaps, I think that's the real point to this. It's not just a matter of people overreacting per se. It's a question of people in positions of power saying, oh my gosh, you know, just a little thing might be enough to just trigger a calamity.
Yeah, but
and that is one of the implication that is, you folks need to get, we're close to a problem. We might not see it for 6 months, might not see it for 6 years, but we are close to a serious problem. If we weren't, they wouldn't worry about what they said. Oh, you idiots. You know, I just said to all those idiot investors, look at this. They're just a bunch of fools. They're playing it this close to the vest. They are afraid to say anything real because they think the system is fragile. And that should be a signal to everybody in this audience. You got to prepare yourself. We're sitting close to something right now. It's like the Titanic. It's hit one iceberg. It may be that the one iceberg isn't enough to sink the ship. Okay? Question is whether we're going to hit the second iceberg, and we are an iceberg in waters that have a lot of icebergs in it. It's just prudent. Get your life preserver. Get close to the lifeboats. You know? There's a problem. What else, Woody?
And, you know, we're going to see, you know, something again from left field is coming. And we never know when that is. I mean, the terrible what happened in Milwaukee,
Yeah.
I mean, Milwaukee, of all places. And, I mean, maybe you could, you know, see something like Baltimore. But, you know, even St. Louis, which is Ferguson, is just outside. So, yeah, Milwaukee, you know, that's just something, not a place where you would, you know, associate what had happened, you know, the riots over the past two nights in Milwaukee. So, you know, it's so anything can happen. And so just
it's the same situation. The Milwaukee situation is an interesting metaphor for what's going on in the U.S. and global economies. There is a certain amount of tension that's built into all of this right now, and everybody's afraid that something extraordinary is going to happen. And if something strange happens, a little thing can cause, at least a seemingly little thing can cause a dramatic response. We're seeing it in Milwaukee. The implications are that something like that is a possibility for the U.S. and global economies. One little thing, nobody knows what it is, what it's going to be. One little thing, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, you know. So, interesting and times.
We have lots of listeners all over the country, various parts of the country, various parts of the world, but the Louisiana, I mean, the weather in some of these places, you had major flooding in Louisiana. You had major flooding in Virginia, where several people were drowned. I mean, it's just, you know, perhaps the same things were going on maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. But today is today, and it's just like, everything is sort of just crazy and out of, you know, it's just...
Well,
and I don't think that the floods in Louisiana are by any means, you know, signs from the alien spaceship, you know, but I do believe, you know.
They're responsible for the crop circles. If we had crop circles in Louisiana, then we'd know it was the space aliens, but as it is.
Do know one thing is when something is pushed to its limits, you know, all kinds of things just seem to happen.
Well, we've got a perfect
A perfect storm is coming, and whether they're related to it or not remains to be seen in many cases. But yet, a lot of things unfold when you have when you're pushed, you know, to the limit. And I think that's what we're things everywhere. You can go to almost any state, and you can find terrible things that are happening.
That's a little bit of having a news. There was a time when you didn't get news that wasn't local, and you didn't have much happening that was bad in the local economies, and the local news wasn't too bad. This is, you know, somebody's cow kicked over a lantern or something like that, but it didn't start the Chicago fire. It just burned down somebody's barn. Today we get news from around the world, and we get it 24/7, and we have that coming at us all the time, and it gives us the impression maybe that there's more trouble than we had 20 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. And I don't doubt there is more, but maybe it's more exaggerated than is the truth. Because it registers in your mind. A busload of people goes off the road in Karachi, Pakistan, and 20 people die. Well, we hear about that today. We wouldn't have heard about that 50 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm not going to report on that.
It happened anyway. Well, I get that.
I'm not
going to
report on that.
But some people are. But some people are. And if you're paying any attention to the news, you're getting it from all sorts of directions, and it gives you an impression that the density of the news, it's more dense, it's more intense than it was 50 years ago. I believe that's probably true, but I also think that it's not as difficult, not as dangerous yet as it kind of seems. The media gives us kind of a false impression. We get the funnel, you know, get that big funnel out there and collects all the news from everywhere, and then it comes at you through just that little pipe. So the point to this is all of us have to be reasonable, we have to be objective, and we have to keep our heads. We are facing a certain amount of potential danger. How much? No one exactly knows, but just the same, it's a good time. You don't want to panic. You don't want to be foolish. You don't want to be ignorant. You don't want to be fearful. Got to learn to kind of stand on your own two feet and decide what you're going to do under what may be, you know, potentially dangerous circumstances. Maybe not catastrophic circumstances, but, you know, difficult. So watch and see.
Well, one of those stories, again, this winter, Farmer's Almanac. Yeah, we still have a little bit of time. Farmer's Almanac predicts a teeth-shattering, ice-cold winter. Farmer's Almanac in Maine celebrates its 200th anniversary. The New Hampshire Old Farmer's Almanac celebrates its 225th anniversary. But in Maine, the long-term weather forecast calls for teeth-chattering winter for two-thirds of the nation.
Teeth-chattering or shattering?
Both.
Okay.
Both. And we're calling it the return of the old-fashioned winter. The ice-cold winter is back, said the managing editor. The irony, so here's for the people in Michigan that are listening, the irony is that the mitten of Michigan will probably not need mittens this winter. They are the one spot along the border that is predicted to be relatively mild, but cold temperatures are expected for the rest of the country. And so there you go, folks. El Nino might, you know, make it a cold winter, but maybe not as cold as the norm, but we'll see. But but they're predicting a extra cold winter.
I'm not afraid.
I'll tell you what, it's very warm in the Northeast. The waters all the way up the coast, which I, you know, when you have those warm waters like that, we might experience some increased hurricanes coming up along the coast because of the warmer waters. There's been certainly a lot of hot states, very warm temperatures throughout the country this year, more so than normal. So because of El Nino. So we'll just
see.
Have to
this
see.
Is El Nino probably doesn't have a green card, does he? This is a little bit of an illegal alien coming up here. And we're going to have to get the Department of Homeland Security to shut down El Nino.
Well, in the meantime, we're going to have a cold winter.
Yeah.
So, what's next, Al?
I don't know. We've got, this is something along the same line we were talking about. The circumstances are fragile. We see evidence after evidence that suggests that we are in a, that people in positions of power know we're in a fragile circumstance. Why are we there? Here's an article from Newsweek, and the title is The Big Lie Behind the Rosy Unemployment Rate. All right, and they are telling us that the government, this is Newsweek, all right, credible mainstream publication, and they're telling us this, it's not exactly news. Everybody's heard this who listens to programs like this, but the government has been lying about the unemployment rate. All right, and here's Newsweek calling them on it in the article, and from my perspective, government gets itself into these idiot situations where we may have a calamity because the government has been unwilling to face the truth for decades. Right? They keep on manipulating. They keep on tweaking. They keep on trying to prevent. Oh, my gosh, we don't want the economy to something to happen where we have a genuine readjustment in the economy. Something honest takes place. We don't want to do that because we're going to be running for office here in just the next 6 months or a year or whatever. And government is constantly trying to treat you and me and everyone in the audience like babies. And we don't do anything to scare the babies. All right, don't tell them the truth. Well, the result is eventually the lies build up like a logjam. And you get this river of truth behind all of this wall of lies, and sooner or later that wall is going to burst. And when it does, all of a sudden here comes this truth rolling down the riverbed, and a lot of people are going to be surprised and shocked and maybe hurt by this tsunami of truth. And the reason this tsunami happens is because government habitually, routinely lies to us. They try to conceal the truth from us. And the idea is that if we don't know the truth, we won't overreact, we won't make things worse. And I'm thinking maybe it would be better just to tell us the truth, let us have our little panics from time to time, and we'll adjust to them and we'll get on with our lives. We may overreact briefly. I get that. But why not? Let's try it. Let's see if we're adult enough where we can deal with truth for a change instead of government manufactured lies. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
We have a little special that we're going to run all week long, and as long as gold maintains, if it goes up a little bit higher, we'll still try to keep it at this level. If it goes lower, we'll adjust both the gold and silver. And it's our normal package that we include a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, so you'll receive one of those, and $20 face value of 90% silver. This includes all your shipping costs for $476. You can buy one or 100 of these, $20 face value, 90% silver, and one 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle at $476. So if you want one or two, no worries. We have the product available for you. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And folks, make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And of course, you can listen to these programs archived and live right from the website. So make sure you get there, dgscoins.com.
Got an article from the Huffington Post, and the headline is, "For Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, a hellish economy ahead." All they're saying here, what they're essentially saying, it doesn't matter who gets into office. There's going to be some serious economic problems for the next administration. And not just serious, they say hellish. And this is just another one of those stories that, look, we're sitting on the edge, we're getting close. You know, it's the music is as if you're in one of those horror movies and the music is rising. The creature is going to appear any moment now, or so it seems. Maybe it'll only be a cat, but I think it's the creature we have to watch out for. The author of the article says, "My God, things are bad behind the scenes. I wouldn't want to be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. The collapse might officially skip Obama's final months in office, but it is coming. With mathematical surety, it is coming. Over the last 6 to 12 months, a stunning array of billionaires, funds, and institutions have come out in favor of gold ownership, and to a much lesser extent, other alternatives, including cryptocurrency. The fact that the world's savviest investors have been quietly piling into gold is simply not good. They're preparing for something, right? And that's where we sit right now. We are preparing for something. And everyone kind of knows it. We don't know what the creature is going to be, but there's something in this haunted house that is not, you know, not kosher." They conclude and they say currencies will fail in some countries like Venezuela. They already have. It's got something to do with the money. We talk about it all the time. Here we have an author from Huffington Post, and he said, look, something's going on with the money. This thing is going to blow up. It should blow up before even Obama gets out of office. They're anticipating it happens before the end of this year. But they're also saying, yeah, but it might skip. It might skip. It might be another 6 months into next year before it happens. It might be 3 months. It might be a couple of years. But, you know, the creature is out there. And it's just one more indication that sensible people would prepare. And what else have we got, Melody? There's bogus enough. Well, this is from shadowstats.com. In the article I talked about a little earlier, the big lie behind unemployment numbers. The article calculated that the real unemployment rate, when you add in a few things that the government isn't counting, they calculate that it would be about 12%. Right? Government says it's a little less than 5%. This article says, no, it's actually up close to 12%. All right, here's an article entitled Bogus Official Numbers versus Real Numbers, and this is from shadowstats.com, and you hear us talk about it on a regular basis. This is John Williams' website, shadowstats.com, and Williams, I've said this before, he is probably the only man I regard as a hero. Right? He's not the sort of person where you say, "Oh, that guy, he's a hero." No, John doesn't look like a hero. I mean, he's overweight and he's, you know, mature and balding and whatever, and doesn't look like anyone's idea of a hero. But he is, and I'd say he may be the most important economist in the last decade or 20 years, because he has figured out and he has persuaded people to believe him that the government numbers are the books are cooked. The way they calculate the economic indicators are not giving us an accurate indication of what's happening in the economy. And it's part of the reason we get into these crazy situations where we might be facing a calamity. It's because we've been misguided. We've been doing stupid things. We've been believing what the government says, and the government gives us false economic indicators for the government's own purposes in order to maintain our willingness to reelect incumbent candidates more so than anything else. Well, Williams calculated the unemployment and the inflation rates and various economic indicators. What he's done is simply calculate them the same way today as they were calculated 15 to 20 years ago. All right? And he's saying, look, they had a formula back then that was honest. And what we have now, the government has devised new formulas, and one of the classic examples is all the people they don't count. If you're not looking for work, you're not deemed to be unemployed. You don't count the unemployment rate. And a lot of people just stopped looking for work. They're unemployed. They'd like to have a job, but they've become so discouraged because they can't find a job that they've stopped looking. The government says, okay, well, we don't have to count them. All right? And the result is we get an official unemployment rate that's a fraction of what the real unemployment rate is. It gives us a false confidence, and it may help to hold the economy together for a while, but sooner or later we're going to have to deal with the truth. Here are a couple of examples. Annual U.S. consumer price inflation reported July 17th of 2016, just last month. Now, the government says it's 1.01%. And John Williams says, no, it's actually 8.66%. He's calculating that it's about eight times higher than what the government claims. And the U.S. unemployment reported August 5th, this month, 2016. The official is 4.88% unemployment, but Williams says it's actually about 23%. Unemployed in this country right now. 23% is evidence of an economic depression. It's not just, oh, gee, 23% is more than 4.88%. That's not just what we're talking about. This historically, you get up over 20%, you're talking about being in a depression. Now, I don't know that Williams' numbers, you know, who can say whose numbers are exactly right? But I am more inclined to believe John Williams because he's been telling us the truth and educating us to know what's really going on. The reason I think he's such an important economist is if it weren't for John Williams, we wouldn't have seen the article, I believe it was from Newsweek that I was reading from a couple of minutes ago, where they're complaining about it's all a lie, the unemployment rate is a lie. We wouldn't see that article. We would simply, the government says it's unemployment is 4.88%, so that must be the truth.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we do figure out, we do know how to follow the different ways the unemployment is calculated. But, you know, he does do a very nice job in putting everything together, and he does a nice job, and he takes the time to go back to the way the items were calculated, you know, at an earlier time before government changes the way things are, you know, sort of like Common Core math. You know, it's just like, okay, you know, so they can get the answer that they want, and, you know, it's It's like going through a maze.
It's new math. I don't know if they still call it new math. They did 20 years ago.
Fuzzy math.
It wasn't important whether you got the right answer. It was important only that you felt good about yourself when you had the answer. That was a kind of objective that they had. They're trying to maintain everyone's self-esteem. 2 times 2 is 6. Well, that's right, Jim. Well, it's not exactly right, Jimmy, but still you did a great job. 6 is as good an answer as any, and they want the kids to feel good about themselves. And you can't run an economy, you can't run a machine, you can't run a business on the basis of feeling good about the numbers. Inevitably, it's going to hurt you. And we've got something like that new math going on with the economic indicators. And government says, just lie to them. Tell them lies, tell them lies, tell them sweet, sweet lies, and they'll buy it. Sooner or later, we won't. And when the world finally wakes up and says, you know, the government has been lying to us. I had no idea.
But you know what, Al? They get the support from all these multinational corporations. They get the backup support from Wall Street, you know, because, you know, it's...
Who's going to give them the backup support when the stuff hits the fan?
They get the backup support from, you know, other countries, governments, and world leaders and so forth. And, I mean, I'm not saying it makes it right. It makes it more disgusting. But, you know, it's just not...
Well, that's why they've been able to They've been able to hold this thing together as long as they can.
Washington, but they've been doing it for a long time.
I understand.
But it's just a lot worse now, and
Here's another one. This is government. Here's one that's fun for me. Who owns the wind? This is from the LA Times. And the headline is, who owns the wind? We do, Wyoming says, and it's taxing those who use it. Not long after it became clear that the robust winds that blow down from the Rocky Mountains and across the Sea of Sagebrush here, meaning in Wyoming, could produce plenty of profit in a world that wants renewable energy, some of the more expansive minds in the Wyoming legislature began entertaining a lofty question. Who owns all of that wind? They concluded quickly and conveniently that Wyoming did. Then, with great efficiency for a conservative state not traditionally tilted toward burdening the energy industry, they did something no other state has done before or since. They taxed it. They're taxing the wind. In the 4 years since Wyoming began taxing power generated by wind turbines, it has collected a little less than $15 million, which isn't a big deal. They said, no, that's not much money. In a resource state rocked by simultaneous declines in the prices of coal, oil, and natural gas, a state trying to close a budget gap that could reach $500 million. So $15 million that they're making off the wind power isn't much compared to the $500 million they need, but they're talking about raising those taxes again, and the one of the companies that's trying to set up a wind farm, a huge wind farm in Wyoming, and they've been approached by state lawmakers that want to raise their taxes, and the company that spent 9 years trying to build the wind project says that higher taxes could further delay or even halt their plan to build this wind farm. They go on, they say, just about every legislator we've met with asks us, you tell us how much we can tax you before we put you out of business. And the guy they're talking about, chief executive of the power company of Wyoming, he says, I just shake my head and say zero. Now, what gets me about this, I'm not sure how much we can, how much can we tax you before we put you out of business? I don't know if that's entirely true or not. It sounds almost too good to be true. But it sounds like it's probably true. In other words, it sounds like a government that believes that the people and private businesses exist for one purpose only, to support the almighty government. The issue isn't whether taxes are fair or necessary. The issue is how much, how many straws can we put on the camel's back before the camel's back finally just snaps? And that's what they don't want the camel's back to snap. That's the back of this wind farm operation. That's the back of the individual people. Don't want any broken backs around here. We just want you to carry the maximum amount of straw, just short of whatever it takes to break your spine. It's evidence to me of the way people in government think. They don't see themselves as the servant. They see themselves as the master. And how much money can we get out of these human resources? How much money can we get out of these corporations? How much can we use for government? And I'm wondering, what do we really get? Are we getting enough bang for our buck from government? Do we get enough to fix the potholes? Or does government get enough to invade Syria or Iraq or Iran or wherever? There are questions as to whether government deserves the kind of money that it's collecting out of the people or borrowing allegedly on our behalf. I'm also interested in the law that declares the Wyoming government that it owns the wind on the plains of Wyoming. That's an interesting law. I mean, will Wyoming state government also claim to own the wind if the wind blows so strongly that it blows the shingles off the roof of a man's house? Will the Wyoming government pay to replace the shingles that were torn off by their wind, the government's wind? Will the government of Wyoming also claim to own and be responsible for the wind that manifests itself as a Wyoming tornado and wrecks the occasional mobile home or town? You know, I've seen where government claims to own the water that falls down out of the sky. Well, fine. You own the water. Then the next time I have a leak on the roof of my home, I want you, the government, get your butt down here and fix the leak and stop your rain from dripping into my house. You own the rain? You'd be responsible. If you own the wind, you'd be responsible for it. Of course, government's not going to do that, but it's the sort of thing that... It's just another evidence of how desperate government is to collect money. They'll tax the wind, they'll tax the rain, they'll tax the leather on your shoes, they'll tax anything they can. They got to have the money, and it makes them dangerous, and it also, it points, maybe you have to be careful where you store your money. Government may decide they need that. They have a right to own that in the same sense that they own the wind, they own the rain. We're going to take a break for another batch of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Ask here with Melody Cedarstrom. Got an article here from Newsmax, and it says, Pew survey, only 44% of Americans rate the economy as good. This is another example. This is another one of these examples of the government is feeding us one set of beliefs, and people are coming up with different conclusions. Only 44%. Now, I don't think that's an infinitesimal number, but still 56% of the American people think the economy is bad or maybe just, you know, barely skating by, but only 44% rate the economy is good. It's evidence that only 44% are completely buying the government's economic indicators. It says Americans, Japanese, and many Europeans are glum about their national economies. By contrast, Chinese, Indian, and Australians feel positive about theirs. These are among the findings of a survey of 20,000 people in 16 countries by the Pew Research Center. Just 44% of Americans rated the U.S. economy as good, although this proportion has risen steadily from 18% in 2011. So things are improving in a lot of people's minds. That's true, but still it's not a majority who believes that to be so. Since last year, the official U.S. unemployment rate has tumbled from 9% to 4.9%. But again, according to John Williams, the article in Newsweek, no, it's not Newsweek. They say the real number is closer to 12%. John Williams says, no, it's about 23%. It hasn't tumbled to 4.9%. Politics plays a role in how Americans assess the economy. Just 37% of conservatives give the economy high marks versus 45% of moderates and 55% of liberals. China's economic growth has been decelerating for 5 years, but 87% of Chinese still describe their economy as good. So do 80% of Indians and 57% of Australians. People in Japan and many European countries regard their economies as poor. No doubt. I mean, Japan has been in trouble now for most of 20 years. Europe doesn't look like it's going to take something like a miracle to save Europe from the kinds of problems they're facing. Whether they're going to see a serious problem in Europe, and a lot of people think they're going to, or whether they'll muddle through remains to be seen. But again, government lies, and in this country, for the moment, 44% are apparently believing the exaggerated economic indicators. But if you're going to believe that, and if the government is feeding you lies, you know, it's like driving a car. You have a speedometer that says, oh, you're doing fine, you're only doing 20 miles an hour, when you're actually going 80. If you're going to believe that speedometer when you're going 80 miles an hour and says, no, you're only doing 20, you're headed for a problem. You're not going to be able to make the curve. You're not going to be able to turn the corner. You're not going to be able to stop in time when you come to the next stop sign or stop light. You have to have the truth in order to govern yourself accordingly. And I am unable to believe that we can embrace lies long term and still come to a happy ending. Sooner or later, it has to bite us. It has to hurt us. And the way around that is you need people in Congress and the Senate and the White House who are actually determined they're going to tell people the truth. And they're going to have to treat you like adults, and you're going to have to learn that you can't just go panicking like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off. You got to actually, okay, this is the problem. This is where it is right now. This is what the truth of the matter is. You know, we are seeing Milwaukee. Portion of it, not the whole city, of course, a portion of it. Fires and violence and the rest of that. How much of that is based on unemployment? I know it's one of these things that's tied up with Black Lives Matter and rage in the African-American community against whites, against the government, against the cops and the rest of that sort of thing. That's what we hear for the reasons that are motivating this violence. But how much of the violence would be there if we had an economy that provided more jobs for African Americans? And why don't we have that economy? Well, part of the reason is we don't need it because we only have 4.8% unemployment. See, so why make a big fuss over it? And John Williams is saying, no, we actually have 23% unemployment. 23% is enough to spawn violence. It's enough to spawn riots. And if we were dealing with the truth, if people told us not just that it's 23% today, but it was 15% 5 years ago, and it was 10% a couple of years before that, and if they said, look, unemployment is up to 10%. Well, we could have done something about it. We could have sat back as a nation and said, wait a second, that's getting out of hand. We've got to do something to hold the unemployment rate below 10%. We've got to act. But if we don't get those numbers, if we don't have the truth of the matter in front of us, we don't act on it. And then we see something break out in Milwaukee, and as Melody was saying, how surprising. Who would have expected this sort of trouble in Milwaukee? Well, what's the real unemployment rate up there? I don't know. But I'm just saying that when the government insists on lying to people, there are consequences that flow from those lies. And maybe, you know, you get enough lies about the employment rate, and maybe the next thing you see is a city like Milwaukee bursting into flames. A lot of people are blaming Obama for this. And not just white people, but some blacks. What they're talking about is they're saying Obama, when he legitimized Black Lives Matter, and he said, yeah, you guys have a legitimate gripe, he essentially gave blacks license to feel outraged, right? When in fact, the numbers indicate that there's not a serious problem here between blacks, black males, and the police. We have a perception that that's the case, but studies have suggested it's not. There's something like, I don't remember, I heard a report just today, the real number of blacks that are being killed by police officers is something like 1 out of 10,000. All right, I'm not justifying it. I'm not saying it's insignificant, but it's not worth burning a city to the ground. But we're getting the fires in part because people in positions of power have been lying. And they've been coddling minorities or voting groups and whatever. They say, oh, you're special and you've been injured and you've been oppressed and you're entitled to this, that, or the other. And the people believe it. And then they act on it. They act on that belief, even though the belief is not grounded in truth. It's not grounded in fact to a significant degree. So point behind all of this, you know, there may be more harm that comes to all of us from lies, even sweet, sweet lies. You know, tell me what I want to hear. Tell me that, you know, everything's going to work out and it'll all be great. Maybe those kinds of fantasy stories ultimately cause more trouble in this country than some painful truth. If we dealt with the real unemployment rate when it was 8%, 7%, 10%, where would we be today? A lot of politicians say, well, we might have been thrown out of office or people wouldn't have confidence in the economy if we told the truth. Yeah, but here we are. Those lies are going to jump up and bite us sooner or later. And when they do, you know, we're going to need a tourniquet. What else, Melody? Do you have something else that you wanted to add, or you want me to pick up another one?
No, go right ahead.
Well, here's something along the same lines. We talked to Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com last week, and he interviewed someone named Carl Denninger and had a headline on his blog referencing this interview. And the headline is, America is doomed without restoring the rule of law. This is according to his guest, Carl Denninger. He says, traitors and entrepreneur Carl Denninger has a dire warning. He basically says that there is lawlessness at the top of society. And if there is, there will be lawlessness at the bottom of society. He says it's illegal for any entity with market power or anybody else to price fix. It's illegal. It is illegal to price commodities of like mind and quantity in the marketplace. That is the federal law, and violence of these laws and violations of these laws are not civil affairs, they're felonies. The only deterrence for corporations against bad behavior is people go to jail or the firm has its charter revoked because it runs out of money. The reason that's the case is as long as corporations can pay a fine and shift the cost onto customers or shareholders or both, there is no deterrent, none at all, for crimes committed by people in major positions of power in corporations, for example. When does a CEO ever get indicted? When do members of the board ever get indicted? The answer is never. And Dessinger says lawlessness trickles down. It's bad for growth and innovation and the innovation that creates jobs. He contends the problem with us is that economic progress. Without people having the ability and promise to get ahead, what do they have left? Somebody's got to give us a straight shuffle. We can't just have a completely unequal distribution of income where the top 1/10 of a percent get, 50% of whatever is being produced and the bottom 95% get next to nothing. It can't work. People have to have some incentive to go out and work, even if they can find jobs. And what I look at this and I begin to understand that economic depressions may be triggered less by economic factors than by declining morality. Perhaps when we see the crooks all around and they're prospering, we withdraw our personal support, enthusiasm, and confidence from the system. We see people like Hillary Clinton. Does she make you want to work for a living, or does she make you want to steal for a living? I think the lesson of Hillary Clinton is that if you want to get ahead, you got to be a crook. Is that a lesson we want? Some people don't mind. Some people are glad. Yeah, hooray for lawlessness. Because they are criminals. But a lot of people are trying to lead decent lives, and it is discouraging to find someone like Hillary Clinton who does appear to be Crooked Hillary. And she's running for the presidency. And not only that, she might win it. And this country seems, if you can believe the polls, which not, again, that's another, it's like economic indicators, maybe more nonsense. We are on the verge of electing a gangster to the White House. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily the first time we ever elected a gangster to the White House, but it's the first time we've elected one who was as obviously a gangster. We find out later a lot of times, yeah, there's a gangster in the White House, yeah, or in the Senate or in the House of Representatives, but who comes up running for office and say, yeah, I'm a gangster? Well, I look at the values that we need to run an effective economy, and I think to myself, I know they're different from the values we have in a nation. The values in an economy are strictly profit and loss. Profit and loss replaces right and wrong. Right and wrong in a nation, profit and loss in an economy. Two different systems of values. And if you can't separate the nation from the economy in a complete way. But if you emphasize, it's the economy stupid, it's the economy stupid, it's the economy stupid, pretty soon all you care about is profit and loss. It doesn't matter to you if you make your money dealing drugs, engaging in prostitution, robbing. What difference does it make? Be a crook. Profit and loss, that's all that matters in the economy. Once you abandon the moral values that you find in the nation, I don't think the economy can continue to stand. The economy can't stand alone. A prosperous economy has more to do with morality than it does with efficiency. We will not become more prosperous by becoming more efficient. We will only become more prosperous by becoming more moral. When we do that, we start to work together in a different way. It's not just a dog-eat-dog situation. I don't mean that, everything is wonderful. If we go back to a moral foundation and we start considering values from a national the perspective of a nation rather than from the perspective of an economy. But we're not going to have an efficient economic system when people understand that the principal means of getting ahead in this world is by criminal activity. It will destroy the economy and it'll put us all into poverty. So do we need more economic efficiency or do we need more morality? I'm going to conclude today by saying we need more morality. I'm Alfred Adduss here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams.